Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, July 26, 2022, Section A. EIA forecasts record PB oil and gas, by Mellon McEwen. Containing almost half the nation's drilling rigs, the Permian Basin has steadily increased its oil and natural gas output with a pandemic-related pause in 2020 since the unconventional shale revolution began over a decade ago. Now the Energy Information Administration is predicting that steady growth will send Permian Basin output to record highs in August. In its productivity report, the EIA said oil production will rise 78,000 barrels a day to a record 5.554 million barrels a day in August. At the same time, natural gas production is expected to rise 166 million cubic feet a day to more than 20.5 million cubic feet a day. The Permian is the number one hydrocarbon-producing region in the United States. It has multiple stacked producing formations with significant hydrocarbon resources, developed infrastructure, and access to well service providers that will help increase Permian production down the road. The statement continued, "We've consistently forecast that U.S. crude oil production will increase to balance against demand for gasoline and other petroleum products. Record high Permian production will be a key driver of growth in domestic oil production, and we expect that increased production will help ease some of the pressures that have contributed to higher-than-average gasoline prices." Ben Shepard, president of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, told the Reporter Telegram that even though inflation is high currently and has the potential to slow the economy dramatically, I believe that worldwide demand will continue to grow. Supply will grow also, but not as fast, especially with a hostile and unpredictable regulatory environment, commented Ed Longnecker. Permian operators continue to respond to favorable commodity prices and the call to increase production to address growing global demand and tight supply, which shows minimal signs of easing given the current geopolitical environment. Longnecker added that private operators will likely continue to be a key driver of the growth in the Permian Basin, with many of the public entities continuing to maintain their capital discipline. The industry is facing a number of challenges that could dampen activity and have a disproportionate impact on smaller, privately held operators, including supply chain bottlenecks, workforce shortages, and an adversarial federal policy environment. Policymakers in D.C. should recognize that more domestic production is what's needed and put an end to vilifying the industry as most vital to ensuring our energy security. COM Aquatics hosts USA Diving Junior Nationals meet. COM Aquatics is hosting the USA Diving Junior Nationals, the first of two national meets to come to Midland. COM Aquatics is expecting more than 600 divers plus coaches, families, and spectators for the Junior Nationals competition, which will continue through August 2nd, and the U.S. Open Championships, which is scheduled for August 4th through the 7th. USA Diving reported that Junior Nationals will serve as the final contest in the 2022 USAD Junior Championship season. More than 70 clubs from across the country will be represented, according to a list of divers. Top athletes from the event in the 14 to 15 and 16 to 18 age groups will be selected to represent the U.S. at the upcoming 2022 FINA Junior World Championships event. USA Diving's Open Championships may serve as a qualifier for potential fall FINA and Grand Prix events, according to a press release. It will also be an opportunity to obtain a qualification score for Winter Nationals. Both events are open to spectators and tickets can be purchased online. More Midland Homes for Sale, by Stuart Doreen. The number of homes for sale in Midland County increased by 24% from March to June. The inventory increase, however, has had no impact on prices. The A&M Center reported an average price of $369,000 for a home sold in Midland County, the third highest since records have been kept going back to 2011, and a median price of $330,000. Many of Midland's streaks related to home sales continued in June. The average price for a home sold in Midland County has topped $300,000 for 46 straight months, a string that goes back to September 2018. Also, June was the 13th straight month that median price for a home sold topped $300,000. But within each streak, Midland home sales are showing even greater strength. A fourth straight month that more than 275 homes have been sold. A fourth straight month that total dollar volume for homes sold topped $100 million. And the average price of a home sold topped $360,000. If there is a soft spot developing in the market, there is more inventory, 633 homes up from 508. The 2 to 4 months of inventory is the most going back to November 2021. Realtors have said it remains to be seen what impact rising interest rates will have on homes sold in Midland County. Katerra brings mobile oil learning unit to Midland. The Museum of the Southwest will host the Mobile Oilfield Learning Unit, sponsored by Coterra Energy, now through the end of September. Run by the Oilfield Energy Center, the unit offers 24 unique stations that teach students about science, technology, and careers related to the oil and natural gas industry through hands-on educational activities. The exhibition is currently on location in the Brown Science Center classroom at the Blakemore Planetarium and is best suited for grades 5th through 8th. Having the opportunity to offer a hands-on learning experience to our students about the heart of the industry that has built our community is incredibly exciting, said Lori Weekly. Having the MOLU on the museum's campus allows students from across the Permian Basin to take advantage of the exhibition. We're excited to bring the MOLU to the Midland community. It is a valuable resource that gives our kids the opportunity to learn about natural gas and oil in a manner that gets them truly engaged with the subject matter, said Dusty Berger. The Museum of the Southwest is a natural partner for this initiative, and we're looking forward to thousands of visitors who will get to experience this exhibit in the coming months. The MOLU has traveled to hundreds of locations across the Permian and Appalachian basins. It offers students the chance to learn about STEM concepts, energy careers, and industry-specific topics such as viscosity, drilling, permeability, and more. Typically, the MOLU is set up at school gyms or common areas and can accommodate up to 200 students in one day. Keep Midland Beautiful honors Arts Council. The Beautification Committee of Keep Midland Beautiful selected the Arts Council of Midland as the recipient of the KMB Community Achievement Award. The award is being given for the Council's continuous beautification efforts at their office and FMH Sculpture Garden at 1506 West Illinois. The 6 years of Arts Council of Midland has been working on beautifying the building and the landscape at this location. Trees and weeds the height of the roof line had to be removed, broken windows replaced, and birds, cats, and rodents removed to begin the project. Then they added the drip and sprinkler lines, made the building one level, and added ramps and sidewalks, planted trees, flowers in beds and pots throughout the property that are native and adaptive to our area. KMB also reported the Arts Council has installed 2 small fountains, limestone pedestals, pavers and edging, and most importantly, 13 sculptures to beautify the garden. Of course, it's the Arts Council, so we also want to recognize their innovative design work and creative use of plants and trees, plus their commitment to maintain their landscape, KMB stated in the press release.
Hello, this is Michael with selected stories from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Tuesday, July 26th. Police say woman opens fire in Dallas airport. Associated Press, Dallas. A 37-year-old woman fired several gunshots, apparently at the ceiling, inside of Dallas's Love Field Airport on Monday before an officer shot and wounded her, authorities said. The woman was dropped off at the airport about 11 a.m., walked inside near the ticketing counters, and entered a bathroom, Dallas Police Chief Eddie Garcia said at a news conference. She emerged wearing a hooded sweatshirt or some other clothing that she hadn't arrived in, pulled a gun, and fired several shots, apparently at the ceiling, he said. At this point, we don't know where exactly the individual was aiming, Garcia said. An officer nearby shot the woman in her lower extremities, wounding her and enabling her to be taken into custody, Garcia said. She was taken to a local hospital for treatment. No other individuals were injured in this event other than the suspect, Garcia said. Police later identified the woman as Portia Odufua and did not speculate as to her motive. We wanted to ensure that our community knows that this is not an active situation, the chief said. Karen Warner told the Dallas Morning News that she was checking in for her flight when she heard a loud argument about 20 feet behind her, followed by a gunshot. Then she started running. I heard about 10 more shots while I was running away, said Warner, who couldn't discern what the argument was about. Love Field, which is one of the Dallas-Fort Worth area's two major airports, suspended airport operations after the shooting, but said at around 3:45 p.m. that they had resumed. The Federal Aviation Administration held up flights for a couple of hours while police investigated, but flights were cleared to resume around mid-afternoon. Business and oil. Oilfield services in for bumpy ride. By Kyra Buckley, staff writer. The world's three largest oil field services companies reported mixed financial results for the second quarter, despite soaring demand for their products and an ongoing war in Ukraine that is lifting prices for oil and natural gas. Schlumberger, Halliburton, and Baker Hughes, each with headquarters in Houston and thousands of local employees, will nevertheless survive the volatility, which now includes a potential recession on the horizon, experts say. I'm confident that it's a short-term disruption in the margins of these companies, said Leah Hartman, chair of finance, accounting, and marketing at the University of New Haven. Hartman said that she expects current supply chain issues to persist, but that the desire of producers to rapidly bring more oil and gas production online to replace lost Russian supply will benefit the services sector, which provides material and labor for the drilling companies. All that should bode well for these companies, she said. It's just going to be a bumpy ride. Paris-based Schlumberger ended the week exporting $959 million in profits, more than double what it made in the same period last year. Revenue surged 20% to $6.8 billion, compared with $5.6 billion in the second quarter of 2021. CEO Oliver LePerch said strong oil and gas prices helped drive increasing demand for Schlumberger products as drilling companies increased production. However, worsening inflation has also triggered fears of a looming recession among economists and investors. The price of crude has hovered around or above $100 per barrel since March as demand surged amid the waning pandemic and Russian oil supplies were lost to boycotts after Moscow invaded Ukraine in late February. Drilling companies, the largest customers for oil field services firms, have been scrambling to increase production, boosting activity for Schlumberger and others. LePerch said he expects that demand for oil field services will continue, and the company has raised its revenue forecast for the year to at least $27 billion, compared with the almost $23 billion in revenue Schlumberger pulled in last year. Meanwhile, Houston-based companies Halliburton and Baker Hughes reported less rosy results, saying they were hurt by a combination of skyrocketing inflation and supply chain challenges. Both companies were hit with more than $360 million each in charges related to their withdrawals from Russia. Halliburton's profits took a year-over-year 52% dive to land at $109 million for the second quarter, compared with the $227 million it made during the same period in 2021. Revenue, however, soared 38% to $5.1 billion from $3.7 billion a year earlier. Halliburton CEO Jeff Miller told investors this week that even though some drillers are shying away from long-term investment projects, many are returning to completed wells to increase output. That translates to more spending on services and equipment from companies like Halliburton, Miller said. Of the trio, Baker Hughes had the roughest second quarter, posting an $839 million loss compared with a $68 million loss during the same period in 2021. The company's $5 billion in quarterly revenue was nearly flat compared with $5.81 billion a year earlier. With fewer orders for offshore drilling equipment, revenue from Baker Hughes's oil field equipment businesses declined by 2% from the first three-month period of 2022. We remain disappointed with the overall level of profitability of the business and are executing on further actions to drive additional cost out and improve operations across the portfolio, Baker Hughes CEO Lorenzo Simoleo told investors this week, adding that deep water drilling opportunities are expected to develop in key markets. Oil rallies as tight supplies counter expectations of slowdown, by Julia Fanzares and Alex Longley, Bloomberg. Oil rose as tight near-term supplies outweighed expectations of another rate hike this week and an eventual economic slowdown. West Texas Intermediate rose 2.1% to settle above $96 a barrel. The Federal Reserve is expected to increase interest rates this week to slow down economic growth. Despite the gloomier outlook, crude markets are pricing in remarkable strength for physical barrels, with some buyers in Asia paying premiums of more than $20 a barrel to secure certain crude grades. Nearby Brent futures are trading at about $5 over the next month's contract, indicating refiners are willing to pay up to secure supplies. Crude prices are showing signs of stabilization around the mid-90s as the oil market still remains tight despite another wave of weakening economic data in the U.S. and Europe, said Ed Moya, senior market analyst at Oanda Corporation. Despite the growing risks of a severe recession, oil should see strong support at the $90 level over the short term. Crude is still up about 25% for the year, although futures have given up most of the gains seen after Russia's invasion of Ukraine in late February. The war has prompted many consumers to pivot away from Moscow, with Saudi Arabia and Iraq filling a large part of the gap in Europe. The U.S. is championing a price cap on Russian crude to limit revenues flowing to the Kremlin to fund its invasion. The oil market has experienced bouts of volatility, characterized by sharp swings and low liquidity, as investors juggle competing supply and demand outlooks. The key macro variable to watch for, clues of future commodity price direction, is core U.S. inflation, said Francisco Blanche, head of Global Commodities and Derivatives Research at Bank of America Corporation, in a note to clients. Should core surprise to the downside, a less aggressive tightening path could fuel a second round of commodity price inflation in 2023, although admittedly the reverse would also be true. Meanwhile, a segment of the massive Keystone pipeline that delivers Canadian crude to the key U.S. storage hub at Cushing restored normal operations late Friday following a power disruption. Service was still subject to mid-month capacity reductions, according to a bulletin obtained by Bloomberg. A prolonged slowdown in operations could have resulted in a supply squeeze to America's largest crude stockpile. Earnings reports and Federal Reserve to give direction for oil markets, by Daniel Graber, correspondent. Analysts said the upcoming earnings reports from Big Oil and a rate decision from the Federal Reserve could provide some clarity in what's otherwise been an increasingly volatile and uncertain oil price environment. Prices for West Texas Intermediate, the U.S. benchmark for oil, swung sharply last week. The price jumped nearly 2% on Monday when President Biden returned home from Saudi Arabia without a concrete deal for more oil. But it tanked 6% on Thursday after data showed U.S. gasoline demand sinking in response to high prices at the pump. It's pretty wild what's going on, said Ed Longenecker, president of the Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Association. We could see oil prices swing from $80 to $120 throughout the rest of this year. Oil closed the week down 2.5% to end the trading session Friday at $95.13 per barrel. It rebounded Monday to settle at $96.70 a barrel in New York. Geopolitical conflict in places such as Libya and Ukraine has added a risk premium to the price of crude oil for much of the year, pushing oil to as high as $120 per barrel. Supply disruptions from the unrest is made worse by strong demand in the Asian economies. But in the West, the Eurozone is faltering under the pressure of higher commodity prices, while the U.S. economy is facing a recession. Concerns about recessions may be self-fulfilling. Many analysts expect the U.S. Federal Reserve will raise interest rates again to curb inflation, which could further squeeze consumer spending by increasing the cost of borrowing. When the Fed increased its benchmark interest rate by 0.75 percentage point in June, oil lost some 3%. The decision sent the value of the U.S. dollar higher, which makes dollar-priced crude oil more expensive for holders of other currencies, thereby curbing demand. Edward Moya, senior market analyst for the New York brokerage Oanda, said some of the recent market swings could moderate after the Fed announces its decision on Wednesday and traders get a better idea of the economic road ahead. Earnings reports from ExxonMobil and Chevron also could provide traders with a sense of the sentiment about what's next in the global economy. Last week, big oil field services companies offered a mixed outlook. Profits for the Houston company Baker Hughes cratered on the back of a weak demand outlook, while Schlumberger, the world's biggest oil field services company, reported strong earnings and a favorable mix of exploration and offshore activity. Exxon has already hinted that the second quarter report could be a good one. This will be the first full quarter where the pressure from the war in Ukraine will be apparent. Paul Hicken, a director at S&P Global Commodity Insights in London, said, even if the general mood is more like Baker Hughes and less like Schlumberger, the road ahead will be determined by which companies can produce more and which can't. They need to restock global oil inventories ahead of further potential supply disruptions, be that from Russia, Libya, U.S. hurricanes, and more. Won't be going away, even as the demand for outlook deteriorates, he added. ECISD Among Districts Affected as Voters Reject Bonds, by Danielle Morin and Shelley Hagan, Bloomberg. As superintendent of a Texas school district that's projected to gain almost 4,000 students in the next 5 years, Scott Murray said his district is desperate for more classroom space. The schools he leads in Ector County are bursting with kids. Many buildings are more than half a century old, and residents keep flooding in, lured by the bustling industry and cheaper real estate of West Texas. Yet in May, voters rejected two bond proposals totaling $398 million to build new facilities and update existing ones, forcing at least another year of cramped classrooms at a time when construction and borrowing costs have surged, making much-needed improvements more expensive. We don't put things out to voters that are on the wish list. We ask them for what we need, Murray said in an interview. The residents of the Ector County Independent School District, which includes Odessa, voted against the measures that would have built a new high school, career center, and funded construction upgrades, including plumbing, mechanical, and fire safety improvements. We've used every nook and cranny in the school and converted them to classrooms, but we've run out of space, Murray said. Before a slight decline in enrollment caused by the coronavirus pandemic, Ector County ISD added about 4,200 students from 2012 through the 2019-2020 school year, according to figures provided by a district spokesperson. There are more than 1,000 public school districts in Texas, and the ones that are growing the fastest generally are clustered around the suburbs of the major metropolitan areas of Austin, Dallas, Houston, and San Antonio, according to the Fast Growth School Coalition, an organization that represents rapidly expanding school districts in the state. The coalition defines fast growth districts as those having enrollment of at least 2,500 students and growth of 10% or more over the last 5 years, or a net increase in enrollment of 3,500 or more students. Fewer bond approvals. One fast growth district outside of Dallas is experiencing student enrollment to surge around 50% in the next 8 years, said Georgianne Warnock, superintendent at Terrell Independent School District. She said that by 2026, it will be out of seats for elementary school students. But it has been increasingly difficult for districts to win voter support for their bond proposals, which are crucial in helping them raise funding needed to build new schools. This year, just 63% of the $16.7 billion in bond measures on ballots in May were approved statewide, according to data from the Texas Bond Review Board. That's compared to roughly 81% on average in the past decade. School bond measures also failed in other states this year. Voters in Hoboken, New Jersey, rejected a $241 million referendum for a new high school and a $263 million proposal in Chester County, South Carolina, to upgrade schools was stymied by residents. The broader economic picture definitely contributed, Warnock said, talking about voters rejecting her district's $95 million ballot measure, which would have funded a new elementary school, safety and security upgrades, and other improvements. People are feeling insecure about inflation and rising costs. And even in low-tax Texas, where there's no state income tax, the property levies hit hard, especially as home values surged, she said. The district plans to go back to voters until its measures are approved, fully expecting the price to go up as inflation causes construction and material costs to skyrocket. The cheapest time to build a school was yesterday, Warnock said. The district is already considering raising the bond measure to $110 million in the next election cycle to account for higher costs. Five of the 10 fastest growing counties in the U.S. are in Texas, according to census data. And with a population surge, often comes a construction boom. The Lone Star State has the nation's biggest school district debt market, with more than $134 billion of bonds sold in the last decade, according to data compiled by Bloomberg. Across Texas, public school enrollment has increased 1% in the last school year, while jumping 8.6% the past decade, according to data from the Texas Education Agency. Texas's school-age population jumped nearly 28% between 2000 and 2020, far outpacing the broader U.S.'s growth of 0.6%, the report said. Texas Governor Greg Abbott touted the population growth in a tweet this month, saying it's younger and faster than the nation. Pent-up needs. But the population boom isn't universal across Texas schools. The district servicing Austin, for example, expects to lose about 4,000 students over the next 5 years, and enrollment in Alief ISD, a lower-income district near Houston, has dropped by more than 5,000 students in the past 2 years. The humble independent school district north of Houston is experiencing extreme growth, Superintendent Elizabeth Fagan said in an interview. The district has been adding about 1,000 students a year, a number that ballooned to about 2,800 in the last school year, she said. Fagan said that if voters didn't approve the bonding, she wouldn't have been able to give school employees a 4% raise because the district would have to spend the money on temporary buildings to house students. It's not a choice to not educate the children, she said. If you don't have the bond dollars to handle the one-time cost of the growth, you then have to use your general operating budget. And now here's a related article to the previous story we just read. From the Midland Reporter Telegram opinion page, Tuesday, July 26th. Opinion Extra, staff columnist. No upside with airing our dirty laundry outside the community, by Stuart Doreen. Dear Angelica Ramsey, I haven't written you in a while. It's been relatively drama-free recently at the district, which has been nice. Thank you for that and for the inside the classroom successes that have been reported since the end of the school year. Your team, campus leaders, and especially the students and teachers deserve kudos for their hard work on the road back from the COVID pandemic. Today, I wanted to ask if you would avoid following the lead of another Permian Basin superintendent who decided to talk to Bloomberg News about his community's decision to vote down a bond proposal. I don't care if you think you have a good reason. There is no upside to putting our community in that light with a national media organization. Bonds are not easy. Sometimes it takes multiple presentations to get it right. Sometimes an electorate might need to see something different, including from the person in your position, the superintendent. Sometimes a pandemic hits, making a community nervous about academic achievement and growth predictions. Sometimes politics get in the way. Either way, throwing your community under that kind of a spotlight is beyond regrettable. Maybe people in Odessa won't care, but I would if my superintendent decided to air our community's dirty laundry to people across the state and nation, especially when just a few years earlier, those same voters approved a significant tax increase to fund operations. Also not reported in the Bloomberg article was that some opposed to the bond election in question have come together to show that they are interested in what type of bond could be brought back. That is building a bond from the ground up and should be applauded. The worst kept secret in Midland is that the school district will eventually approach the voters for a bond. Maybe it will be in 2023. I believe that continuation of the academic rebound, a good bond plan, and proper execution of a bond campaign will mean electoral success. But if it doesn't, don't throw Midland under the bus. The Bloomberg story indicated that just more than 50% of bond campaigns across the state were approved in 2022. That was the lowest total going back at least a decade. With COVID and so much post-pandemic uncertainty, such a low passage percentage isn't surprising. Maybe Texas voters had grown weary of the tens of billions of school districts' debt passed, with more than $134 billion of bonds being sold in the last decade, according to data compiled by Bloomberg. Maybe all politics are local, and that superintendent just didn't do enough to inspire a $398 million investment in education. I don't know, and I really don't care. I know that people in this community will have your back, whether you can pass a bond or not. I can't say the same if your comments are part of a story that makes it look like Midlanders don't care. Thanks for your time and good luck with the TEA ratings. We are excited about Midland ISD's academic successes so far and appreciate all you have done for our community. Sincerely, Stuart Doreen.
Alex Subia passed away on July 15th. Services for Alex will be Tuesday, July 26th at the Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Mass will be Wednesday, July 27th at Our Lady of Guadalupe Church at 10 a.m. Bobby Joe Weedle passed away on Friday, July 22nd. The family will receive friends from 11 to 2 on Thursday, July 28th at Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Funeral service will be at 2 p.m. Thursday, July 28th at the Klondike Baptist Church. Interment will be at the Texas State Veterans Cemetery in Abilene at 10 a.m. on Friday, the 29th. James Paul Roy passed away on July 19th in Cloudcroft. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m. Wednesday, July 27th at Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Funeral service will be at 2 p.m. Thursday at Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Jerry McNair Fullenweiler passed away on July 21st. A memorial service will be held on Friday, July 29th at 2 p.m. at Highland Park Presbyterian Church in Dallas. Thomas Claude Stewart passed away recently. Visitation will be Friday, July 29th at 2 p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral services will be held at 3 p.m. Edwin Burr passed away on July 24th. Services pending with Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Caleb Buchan passed away on July 21st. A gathering with the family will be held from 5 to 8 p.m. on Thursday the 28th at Midland High School cafeteria. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Reyes Isabel Bonilla passed away on July 23rd. Visitation will be held Tuesday the 26th from 9 to 8 p.m. with a rosary being recited at 7 at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Arrangements are under the direction of Alice Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Richard Allen Rose, Jr. of Midland, passed away on July the 11th. A memorial gathering will be held on the 26th at 7 p.m. at Walk on Bistro in Midland. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery and Funeral Home.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, July 26th. Meetings on Joint Odessa-Midland Hospital System underway. A group that includes area business and community leaders has been meeting for about 8 months about the possibility of creating a regional medical and research center off Highway 191 and FM 1788 in Midland County that contemplates relocating Medical Center Hospital and Midland Memorial Hospital from both cities and repurposing their current buildings. Documents show Don Evans, chairman of the Permian Strategic Partnership, met with Grant Billingsley, president and CEO of the Scarber Foundation, Texas Tech University Health Science Center, Chief of Staff Cole Johnson, UT System Executive Vice Chancellor Dr. John Zerwas, Texas Tech Health Sciences Center President Dr. Lori Rice Spearman, and the CEOs of both Midland Memorial and MCH, among others. Others were also involved in a meeting held June 27th at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. A printed copy of a PowerPoint presentation featured at the meeting shows the complex would also house a main street with cafes, shops, a theater district with an outdoor amphitheater, and also a hotel conference center. A park would also be part of the complex. Elected officials from Ector County and the city of Odessa and Medical Center Hospital were reluctant to speak publicly Monday, citing the good work the PSP does and also pending grants from the PSP. Odessa Chamber of Commerce CEO Renee Earls said she doesn't know all of the details of the plan, but said the topic was brought up during a weekend chamber retreat. She said the chamber needs to pursue a fact-finding mission to further explore the plan. We are too large of a community to not have our own hospital and are fortunate to have two, she said, and we have seen how well they work together like they did throughout COVID. She said the value of medical center property downtown and in other parts of Ector County is critical to the local economy, and we don't need those buildings to go dark. We are trying to improve downtown. She added that depending on the outcome of such a project, it could be a huge downfall for Odessa and would affect sales, tax revenue, and employment, as MCH is the second largest employer in Odessa. Elected officials from MCH and the city officials did note privately that the public should have been in on planning from the beginning. The copy of the PowerPoint shows that the plan, the Road to 2026, is a framework of partnerships that would include an expansion of the University of Texas Permian Basin campus that would include a health sciences complex with nursing, pre-med, as well as future programs such as occupational, physical, and speech therapy, pharmacy, and public health. It also details an expansion of the engineering, business, music, applied research, and workforce programs. Individuals with deeper knowledge of the plan privately pointed out that the new facility would have about half the hospital beds that both Midland and Odessa combined currently have. One source said meetings went from "What can we do to help the medical community?" to "How can we turn this into a new regional hospital?" Odessa Regional Medical Center is a private hospital, but both MCH and Midland Memorial are public hospitals funded by both sales tax and property taxes revenues. Some sources on Monday said there is a plan to ask the legislature for severance tax money to fund the planned health care system. State Representative Brooks Landgraf said bills cannot be filed until November for the 2023 legislative session. He said he has not been involved with the planning, but would say that anything that has an impact on health care for our community needs to have input from the community. County set to hire realtor to explore sale of Coliseum. The Ector County Commissioner's Court is set to hire a realtor to enter into discussion about a potential sale of the Ector County Coliseum during Tuesday's meeting. Greg Simmons, the commissioner for Precinct 2, said during an interview on Monday morning that Tuesday's agenda item to consider, discuss, approve, and take any necessary action regarding a proposed real estate broker contract between Ector County and J.L. Heritage Copper Key Realty for the potential sale of the Ector County Coliseum is solely to hire J.L. Heritage Copper Key Realty as the county's realtor to enter into contract talks about a national company headquartered out of Florida that has properties across the country. This agenda item and others will be heard at 10 a.m. Tuesday at the courthouse annex. There would not be any kind of sale or decision made on Tuesday, Simmons said. It is simply to say we are going to hire this individual to be our realtor and find out if it's even a feasible request. I would have never thought anybody would want to buy the Coliseum. It's a very old facility, and it's pretty specific on what it can be used for. Sure enough, there are companies out there that do that. At this point, if someone wants to buy it, we have to find out what price that would be and does it make sense to even consider it. There wouldn't be a decision for quite a while, probably, Don Stringer, commissioner for Precinct 3, said everyone who has called him since the announcement was made public on Friday has expressed their disapproval. There's no definite in place, Stringer said on Monday afternoon. The people that have contacted me are not in favor of selling the Coliseum. I haven't talked to anybody since it became public that is in favor of selling the Coliseum. Simmons said the county wouldn't have considered putting the Coliseum up for sale had this company not approached the county about purchasing the facility. Simmons said discussions would take place over a long period of time and would be open for public scrutiny and comment. Simmons said the facility includes the Coliseum, all the barns on the property, and parking lots. On Friday, Heritage told the Odessa American they would be a for-profit business and that he was contacted by the company and that the company thinks Odessa needs more entertainment. He said the company would honor the Chuck Wagon Gang lease. Heritage also said they would honor contracts with possibly some small increases in following years for recurring contracts. Heritage also detailed the company sees a great opportunity to bring in more events and festivals, possibly once a month, and plan on adding an indoor soccer group, an outdoor amphitheater, and upgrade the sound system. He declined to name the company on Friday, but said they hope to do it in the next 6 months. Heritage also said the company would keep the current staff, nothing is finalized, and Heritage would represent the county, but he stressed nothing is finalized until commissioners make a decision. The Coliseum is reportedly fetching an offer between $20 and $25 million for the facility. That has always been a county complex and is home to the Jackalopes, the Permian Basin Fair and Expo, and the Sandhills Stock Show and Rodeo. The Commissioner's Court voted on June 28th to extend one-year contracts to Odessa Concessions Incorporated and Jackalopes Holding LLC. During Tuesday's meeting, Ector County District Attorney Dusty Gallivan has a personal request that would be to consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding a request to hire two assistant district attorneys. As of Monday, the Ector County District Attorney's Office has five openings. Gallivan said another attorney is leaving in a week, so the District Attorney's Office will be back to six openings. He also said if the two assistant district attorneys are approved during Tuesday's meeting, that will shrink the number of openings to four. Full staff at the Ector County District Attorney's Office is 22. Commissioners will also discuss four agenda items in executive session. The executive session topics include legal matters, real estate issues, and personnel matters. The court will also consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to reappoint Commissioner Mike Gardner to the 911 Emergency Communication District of Ector County to be effective from October 1st, 2022 to September 30th, 2024, and authorize the county judge to sign. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action on a presentation by Beaton Bow Homes regarding a subdivision that they are considering building Precinct 1. Declare surplus and approve the sale of auction of assets and other items on the attached list and take any further discussion or action deemed necessary. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to update SOV Statement of Values for submission to Travelers Insurance Group in partnership with USI Insurance Services and authorize the county judge to sign. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action for the appointment of judges and co-judges for 2021 to 2023 and the appointment of early voting clerks and ballot board for 2022-2023. Consider, discuss, approve, and take any necessary action regarding modified library hours, new strategic plan, mission, vision, and strategic area of focus, the implementation of TikTok for library social media, and authorize the county judge to sign any and all documents associated with this agenda item. Consider, discuss, approve, and take any necessary action regarding a new, enhanced, multi-year software subscription purchase agreed for Circe Dynex and authorize the county judge to sign. Approve, reject, discuss, or take any necessary action regarding Amendment Number 8 to the contract with Vector Fleet Management and to renew the contract for the fiscal year 2022-2023 and authorize the county judge to sign. Award, reject, discuss, or take any necessary action regarding the amendment for food service for the adult and juvenile detention centers and authorize the county judge and other county officials and employees to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding a request to hire two ADA at a Step 5 and a Step 7. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action on vacating TTF Ranch Estates' third filing, 21.55 acres, located on Section 26, Block 44, T2S, TNPRR Company Survey, Ector County, Texas, and approving TTF Ranch Estates' corrected second filing, 21.55 acres, located in Section 26, Block 44, T2S, TNPRR Company Survey, Ector County, Texas, Precinct 4, and authorize the county judge to sign. Review, consider, discuss, approve, and take any necessary action regarding the following proposed consent agenda. To consider, discuss, and approve a line item transfer to General Fund, Library, Educational Travel, 001-690-5161 from Periodicals, Microfilm, 001-690-5200 for $1,000. Consider, discuss, and approve a budget amendment to General Fund, Library Department Furniture and Equipment, 001-690-5191, and to donate revenues, 001-4171 for $8,000. Consider, discuss, and approve a budget amendment to General Fund, Health Department, Motor Vehicle Repairs and Maintenance, 001-470-5251 from Unreserved Fund Balance, 001-3310 for $4,500. Present the county judge's proposed 2022-2023 budget for public inspection and review. Consider and approve the accounts payable fund requirements report for July 26, 2022 to review county financial statements and reports. Quick hits. Commissioner's Court meeting. The Ector County Commissioner's Court has scheduled a meeting at 10 a.m. Tuesday at the Ector County Annex Building, 1010 East 8th Street. For new and past meeting agendas, for the minutes or more information, visit tinyurl.com/b2wzt7wx. Storytime and Craft. The Ector County Library, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled Storytime and Craft Egg Diver for ages 0 through 12 from 10:30 a.m. to noon today in the auditorium. For more information, call 432-332-0633 or visit ector.lib.tx.us. Bridge Group. The Northside Senior Center, 1225 Adams Avenue, has scheduled Bridge Group from 12:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. Tuesdays. Call 432-337-5281. Killer Queen. Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North Farm to Market, 1788 Midland, will present The Killer Queen at 7:30 p.m. today. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. For more information, visit tinyurl.com/m2k2cw4c. Sea Creatures Scavenger Hunt. The Ector County Library, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled a Sea Creatures Scavenger Hunt throughout July. For more information, call 432-332-0633 or visit ector.lib.tx.us. School Supply Drive. The Odessa East Rotary Club has scheduled a school supply drive through Friday. Drop off items at the Abalos Law Office, 520 North Lee Avenue. The drive will benefit ECISD students. Star Yard of the Month. Keep Odessa Beautiful is currently accepting Odessa Pride Star Yard of the Month nominations for August. Star Yard of the Month recognizes Odessa citizens who contribute to the overall aesthetic and health of the city by maintaining exceptionally clean and beautiful properties, both residential and commercial. Call 432-335-4686. Email kob@odessa-tx.gov or visit keepodessabeautiful.org. Registration window paused. This is the time for registration. However, the process is on hold right now as Ector County ISD goes through an update of the system. At this time, the Ascender Parent Portal is not active, and you will not be able to complete the registration process. The district expects the update to be complete early this week. The district newsletter said the first day of school for all pre-kindergarten through 6th graders and 9th graders is August 9th. The first day of school for 7th, 8th, 10th, 11th, and 12th graders is August 11th. ECISD's calendar can be found online at https://www.ectorcountyisd.org/. State Board of Education recognizes 2022 student heroes. The State Board of Education is proud to recognize the 15 recipients of the 2022 Student Heroes Award, honoring Texas public school students who voluntarily perform acts of kindness. This year's recipients range from third graders to high school seniors. Each have displayed a servant's heart and compassion for their peers, classmates, and communities. While these students don't perform any of these acts for recognition, it is only appropriate that we shed a light on their selflessness and desire to do good in the world, SBOE Chair Kevin Ellis said in a news release. Through their acts of kindness, they are making their schools and communities a better place. On behalf of the entire SBOE, it is my honor to recognize them with this honor. The students were presented with a plaque and a medallion during ceremonies at their respective schools. The board approved a resolution in their honor during the general meeting of the SBOE in Austin on June 17, 2022. District 1 award recipient Ashley Monquero was presented by SBOE member Georgina Perez. Monquero, a senior at Odessa Career and Technical Early College High School in Ector County ISD, is a hard worker who thinks of others' needs and has the initiative to make things happen. Her accomplishments range from helping the homeless to advocating for women in abusive relationships. During her senior year, she organized a pad drive for low-income and homeless people, collected hygiene packages, participated as an advocate on a leadership council at a crisis center, and visited hospitals as a superhero to brighten children's days. She is determined to continue serving others and be a hero in her community, the release said.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.